Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
Okay. Woo! Our audience is so excited today. Woo, we're whistling and everything. All right, people, calm down. Calm down. Well, I'm excited too. So I get to introduce my guest today, who is Jeff Stiles. He's a management consultant for small to medium-sized contact centers. He has spent over 30 years in the insurance industry, the majority of which was spent on the front lines of customer service. He brings that knowledge and his 11 years of human resource experience to his work of helping companies find the best blend of people, process, and technology to work and serving their clients. His mission simply is to help contact centers do better and be better in their quest to provide remarkable experience for their customers. He has spent 19 years in the contact center space, much more than I have, where he's helped guide and evolve State Farm's contact centers from a single-channel call center to an omni-channel mindset. His passions center around employee engagement and customer experience and how the former is such a large determinant of the latter. In addition to his work, Jeff is also a high school track coach, which allows him to continue to explore how to engage, how to help people grow into the best versions of themselves. So I might ask you some questions about that too, but welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that when I kind of scouted you out for this show was just, you know, your focus as a consultant company around people, making people better. And I think in this really trying time, how you're helping your clients kind of deal with not only the tangible side of the contact center space, but the intangible side of managing people and helping them getting the best out of them, you know, building your best team. You know, the title of the show is Building the Best Team Will Guarantee Your Success. So maybe you could just tell our audience a little bit about, you know, your philosophy around your experience in contact centers around when you've seen people do that and demonstrate those types of behaviors versus the people that aren't trying to build the best team and get the best out of their people and how that impacts the organization.
Well, you know, Nancy, I had the good pleasure of, as you mentioned, working in the contact center space in State Farm for about 19 years. And we really started, 19 years ago, really from kind of sticks and duct tape trying to put that thing together. But it became very, very early on, it became just a huge influencer on me was just the power of people and what they could do in a contact center space, in a call center space, even if they didn't have all the tools and tech, and for that matter, a rigorous process around what they do. So, you know, I having 11 years in HR and kind of being a study of the human mind, that just kind of captured me because you look at the contact center job, and this may be true kind of universally for contact center jobs. It can be a tough job. You're told
right.
when to stand and where to go and you know, when to do what you need to do. And you're, you know, in many situations, you're given a script. And you're telling adults, you know, this is the job that you get to do. And they're, quite frankly, placed in that situation of being perhaps the only contact that a customer has with an organization or, you know, from the standpoint of an outsourcer, any organization that outsource contact center supports. So, you know, they're calling in with concerns or trying to make a purchase or whatever they're trying to do, but they're talking to a person and they're trying to make
right.
a connection with a person. And establish a rapport with a person. So for me, it just became one of those things of there's so much power that an individual has, regardless of what they're doing or how they're doing or what they're selling, that each individual person that works in that contact center can connect with customers. But they can only do that when they're bringing the best version of themselves to work. So you
right.
know, that has been my focus is just from the beginning – was how do you draw that out? You know, how do you draw that out in a context? it's you know, there's no rocket science behind it. It's just a focus of making sure that you are kind of laying out the path for folks. And you ask the question of, what do you see in contact centers that do this very well, and what do you see that contact centers that don't do it very well?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's the numbers bear it out. In the contact centers that do it well, they have low churn. They have high performance metrics. The folks are highly engaged in the work that they do. And the converse is true in those contact centers that don't really focus on this. They have high churn. You know, they're turning over 80, 90, 100% of their staff during any given year, and just kind of having reload. And it, to me, it is I don't understand how something as simple as helping people connect with the work that they do gets lost in the translation.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, and they're not highly paid. I mean, and it's sometimes it's the only type of work some people can, you know, do, because they don't have the skill set or couldn't afford to get the skill set that other people might have gotten with a college degree. But yet, and there's limited opportunities for them in that geographic area. So what are some of the things that you might have done to kind of boost morale, even though you couldn't give them a bump in pay? You know, what are some of the techniques that maybe you used in the past that kind of helped keep people's morale upbeat and things like that?
Well, you know, there's always things that people do. They'll throw. They try to throw money at people, and they try to throw food at people, and those are all important
mm-hmm.
things. But I think the thing that we tried to do in our contact center was we tried to establish relationships. You know, we approached it more like we were a family than anything else. And when
mm-hmm.
you're in a family and you're united as a family, then there's a, you know, the commonality of what you're trying to accomplish. So we spent a lot of time just kind of talking, connecting with our folks, whether it's in the morning, you know, cruising down the aisle. So if you can imagine, you know, contact centers in the days when we were all kind of working from a big facility, a 25,000 square foot facility. You get up and, you know, when you get in there the first part of your day, you know, what you're trying to do is to make your way across the floor and just make those connections. Establish that rapport with folks. And talk to them about things that are important to them. So, you know, if you're walking past a desk and you see that your representative has pictures of their kids up, or, you know, people tend to telegraph what's important to them, then you make it a point to talk to them about that and be genuine about
mm-hmm.
it and really kind
mm-hmm.
of connecting and be concerned about who they are as a person, because you want to give them a sense of value. You know, that's what really all of us are kind of looking for, is that I'm valued as a person, first and foremost, then my thought process and the work that I do is valued, and you do that as you're having your conversations about the work. You're helping them to understand what the greater mission is of the operation. You spend time kind of laying out the roadmap, for lack of better words, and where they are on that roadmap. So, you know, I've been giving thought to this whole premise of, do people understand, you know, we spend a lot of time telling people what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really spend a whole lot of time telling them where we want them to go. We tell them what and how in a lot of situations.
Right.
Very prescriptive about that. But we don't spend a whole lot of time telling them where and why. And I think those are the two questions that are most important for me as an individual to understand, you know, why do you have me doing this activity in the first place? Why is it even important? And where are we ultimately heading? And then I can, you know, I can do a couple of things. I can get my mind around what my role is and how it plays a part into the larger role. So if you, you know, if you sit down and you talk to a representative about, we need your call handling time to be X, and it's higher than that, and you
mm-hmm.
don't really explain to them kind of what it is you're trying to accomplish. We want to take more calls.
Right.
We want to
right.
service more customers. We're trying to drive, you know, we're trying to drive the price down. And you can drive the price that the longer you're on a call, the more time it takes, you know, the dollars are kind of running.
Mm-hmm.
All those things kind of help people understand, okay, I know what you want me to do. You're going to tell me how you want me to do it, but then I can connect with and get myself behind the why. So we spent just an awful lot of time just having conversations, individual conversations, town hall meetings where you pull everybody together and let them talk about what are the big issues that they're running into? What are their pain points? You know, what is impacting them? And then actively work to try to remove or mitigate mm-hmm. some of those pain points so they know that I'm being heard, my opinion matters, I'm making a mm-hmm. difference in terms of the way the work is done. It's all about drawing together that connectivity, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, those
yeah.
are the
well,
things that we did. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go back to kind of your walkabout that you would do, and now that's not possible because nobody's sitting in those chairs. Have you heard of different techniques that managers are using to kind of keep that connectivity, that one-on-one, the family atmosphere in a virtual environment?
You know, I've been having that conversation with folks of late because I think, you know, that is one of the challenges, one of the opportunities in the work from home type models.
Mm-hmm.
But we've always done it. You know, I think people see that as being more of a challenge than it has been. But, you know, there are numerous situations where an individual reports to somebody that's in a different location and it's just not possible to
yeah.
physically get together.
Yeah.
So I think what people are doing and what I'm seeing more is they're being intentional about, you know, setting up times to just talk, whether it's a
mm-hmm.
daily 5-minute check-in using a little video chat feature or whether they're having more frequent meetings, trying to establish time to just sit down and talk. And one of the things that I've been kind of curious about, and I'm asking even the folks that put together the technology that kind of runs behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my mind, you know, if you, again, envision walking down that virtual, that row, one of the things that you would do is look to see if that rep's on a call. And if they're not, or if you can catch the eyes and let them
yeah.
know, hey, when you get on this call, I just want to chat for a second. How do you create that in a virtual
mm-hmm.
perspective? Do,
mm-hmm.
do you have
mm-hmm.
kind of a pop-up box that says, I can see where you are in the call. You know, we're watching all the call metrics anyway.
Yeah.
I can see you're in a call, and you can send a little instant message that says, when you get off this call, let's chat. And all they have to do is click on a link, and then you have a quick conversation about, hey, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Any challenges? Did you see the emails or communications that we put out about training? Kind of what can I do for you? And the whole time it's blocking the call that's, you know, the next call that comes in, which, you know, puts pressure
right.
on everybody to make that call kind
right.
of happen quickly. But
right.
it's a chance, again, to just be really informal and having that quick conversation just to check in. And if you've got, you know, if you're a team lead or a supervisor and you've got 15, 20 folks, you know, when the shift starts, that's going to be your first priority is those check-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And you just make it a part of your day. And they know after a while you start to get a little bit of traction with it, and they know that that's going to be a part of the day or the conference.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
If they're caught up in a problem, they have an issue that has nothing to do with the call. It may have to do with I need
right.
time off or, you know, I'm not understanding this particular procedure. They can flag the supervisor the same way and just have a real quick chat about
okay.
that.
Okay.
I think, you know, the technology is available to be able to do that. It's just a matter of finding the best way that works for, you know, the leadership and that team.
Yeah. It's the other thing I've thought about, too, is how do you get them to share with each other? You know, maybe, you know, have a little team meeting and have them do two truths and a lie or, you know, what was the best thing that happened in that week? You know, just to kind of just get them out of just pure work stuff. I want to take
I think that those
hold on a second. For
yeah.
some reason, the timeline is running out on this tool that I'm using, and I'll edit this. But we can keep going. I think it'll keep recording it. So I just don't want you to panic if you hear something on your end that says the show's done. I think it'll keep recording it. So I just and I'll edit this out. But for some reason, it changed it from a 30-minute show to 15 minutes, which I didn't even know it could do that. But anyway. So back to my original question as far as how do the team, you know, maybe share or build camaraderie with each other virtually? Have you seen any examples of that?
Yeah, I heard something just the other day where, you know, you have a team, and this would be difficult to do in a contact center, but essentially they create kind of an open Zoom meeting and leave it open for a period of time for people to jump in, jump out, and let the team have those types of conversations. it really is no different than pulling them into a conference room and or, you know, some type of a meeting space. They're just doing it online. And I think that those, particularly during this time, I think that those types of interactions are important because we're all starved for connection with other people. You know, we're all kind of living this isolated lifestyle where, you know, where we can have those conversations kind of in passing by about things that have, again, very little to do with work, but has everything to do with who I am as a human being and connecting with others on my team and feeling a part of something bigger. So to the degree that you can facilitate that and work around, you know, the more pressing matter in many situations, which is taking care of the call volume and taking care of the contacts that are coming in, the better off you are. And again, that goes back to my earlier message of if you're trying to make sure that you have time available to do those things, that, again, is one of the reasons why we're trying to handle our calls as efficiently as possible to allow us the time to do some of the things that we want to do. And it's just tying all those messages together and then providing the opportunity so people can see, again, I was a part of making this happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see yourself using your track coaching skills with your coaching and management skills with your clients?
Absolutely. You know, the beautiful thing about coaching, and I coach in high school, so the beautiful thing about coaching ninth graders through 12th graders is they come to you with all kinds of different capability and interest, for that matter. You know, some kids will come out for track solely for the social perspective. Some are trying to fill a spot. Some their parents told them to do it. And then you have some who, you know, this is absolutely my favorite sport, and this is all I want to do, and I'm all in. And because they have those different perspectives and they have a different level of skill and even a different level of understanding of the sport, as a coach, you're trying to figure out how to, again, get the best version of each one of those kids to come forward. So you have to pay close attention to who they are as a person, develop those connections, which will be different for each one of them, find out what their motivation is for being out there in the first place, and kind of use that as your conversational point about why we're doing certain things. And then you have to understand their learning style. You know, you have some kids who are very visual. You know, they're visual learners, so you have to show them what to do. And I'm a sprint and hurdle coach, and I'm way too old to do some of the things I used to do 30 years ago or 40 years ago. But to the degree I can, you know, you try to show them these are the things that I want you to do and why, and let them, you know, practice it and then provide feedback. And, you know, each person receives feedback differently and kind of work through what that person's style is. How do you coach that individual? How do you connect with that individual? And keep trying different things. And the other thing that I've learned, I learned way more during the track season than I think the kids that I coach learned. I learned way more about who I am as a person and how to connect with individuals. Mm-hmm. And it forces me to be a student of the sport because, you know, if you've got if you dealt with teenagers, you know they're going to ask a ton of questions and you need to understand. You need to at least appear to be somewhat smarter than they are or they're never going to buy in. So,
well, it's the whole motivation, too. You know, I think kids, it's like, you need to show up here at this time on time, or, you need to be da-da-da. And, you know, it's my daughter teaches speech or coaches speech. You know, she's just – it just gets frustrated sometimes when she carves out a special time to do some extra coaching. They don't show up, and it's just, you know, it's like, okay, where's the accountability here?
Well,
so I'm sure you run into the same thing.
I've learned from some coaches that have done it a lot longer than me. I think, you know, the thing that you do, particularly with kids, and I think you have to do it with anybody, is set the rules of the road. You know, these are the lines that you really can't go outside of. And you have, if you're going to be a part of a team, then you have a responsibility to show up and work hard every day. Those are the two things that you can do that everybody can do, is show up on time and work hard, and that's your commitment to the team. And if you don't do that, then there's an accountability for it. And, you know, if you really want to get a kid's attention, have them show up late for practice, and instead of making them run a lap or do something, make everybody else on the team run around.
Okay.
It's,
yep.
it's a whole different mindset then, because now my teammates, who I care about, got punished because I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. So.
That's smart. Yeah, no, I like that. You know, there's a lot, especially in this current kind of culture clash of diversity and Black Lives Matter and women's rights and women equal pay and things like that. You know, when I was a manager of a team, you know, you'd interview people, or you'd have people on the team interview prospective coworkers, and I'd always get this kind of like, well, I don't know if they'll fit into our culture here, you know. And I think historically, a lot of companies would hire people that were just like them, right? And so it's like, because that the opinion of, I don't think they'll fit in our team, or they're a little bit different than us. And do you see that changing because we want inclusivity and we want to have a more diverse team? Do you, you know, how do you help people get past that? Well, you know, I don't know if they'll fit into our culture, you know, if they seem that they're different than they are, but that doesn't mean they won't be a good employee and a good team player. So I don't know if you ever ran into that situation where you felt, you know, you're bringing somebody into the team that wasn't a cookie cutter version of everybody else on the team, and how that had an impact on the business.
It is absolutely, and again, contact center spaces are just incredibly unique anyway, because you have so many people that come to you from different walks of life. So in the contact center we had, you know, we had individuals who had retired from another industry and were, you know, working for whatever their reason was, having a job, whether it was benefits or had something to do or whatever it was. And you had college kids and, you know, people trying to return to the workforce. You were really all over the base. And they brought all of these diverse perspectives into the workplace. And the last thing we wanted to do, we wanted to be able to put out a consistent product in terms of what the customer received when they got a call on the phone. But we wanted it to be that individual's version of what that consistent product was. Because, again, that's where the connection is. And what you see is you see organizations that do exactly what you said. They'll tell somebody, you know, they'll bring somebody in and they say, we're going to hire for diversity. And the first thing they start to do is start to round off the edges to make them fit into this form of what the company is and change them into whatever that company wants to be. And I think what it takes is – a commitment. In fact, I was talking to a COO yesterday in an entirely different industry about the whole notion of diversity and inclusion. And I said, you know, really the biggest challenge, I think, is for the senior leadership, the CEO, the COO, the folks that have the responsibility for running the organization to set the tone, to really kind of force the conversation around, we're going to do things differently and to be accepting of different ideas and different people. And it's an evolution, you know, we all kind of come to work with our set of biases and filters that we've developed over time. And what you're asking people to do is to kind of check that at the door and embrace everybody. And that's not easily done. I don't think, you know, as we work through things from a Black Lives Matter perspective and all the cultural issues that are going on today, they're not going to resolve themselves. It took hundreds of years to develop these mindsets and microaggressions and all those types of things. You're not going to wipe it out in 6 weeks or 2 months.
No.
It is a continual renewal in the workplace and challenging the notion of forcing everybody to be the same. Do we have a common goal that we're trying to accomplish? Absolutely. But we need everybody to bring the best version of themselves to work. And to do that, to a certain degree, they have to be who they are and why they came and why you were attracted to them as a person for your company in the first place, and help them kind of focus who they are to help the organization reach the goals that the organization has set out for them. So, you know, if I know as an individual that this is where the organization that I chose to join is trying to go, then I can figure out how I, Jeffrey Stiles, being the kid that I am, having had all the life experiences that I am, and being an African-American male, I can figure out how I can make that better for the organization And how much better for me is it when I have an organization that allows me to do that versus, you know, tries to stop me from doing that. I want to be a part of making this organization better, and I have some perspectives that I think will help. But you got to, you know, whoever's controlling, and I hate that word, but whoever's in charge of kind of leading that group has to make it okay for me to feel comfortable doing that. And it'll take time. You know, it takes time to develop that trust that I can put a little bit of me out there and, you know, and see how that goes. And then if that goes well, I can put a little bit more. And eventually you get that best version of who I am and all of who I am in the workplace, that work environment.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's a great response because, you know, I was just thinking of the study that was done, years ago at Iowa City, University of Iowa, where they did brown eyes, blue eyes. I don't know if you're familiar with this, where the teacher would just divide the class, whoever had brown eyes sit on one side and the other had brown eyes. And so all the people with brown eyes got all these favors, you know, they got all the special treats. They got, you know, just to show we're discriminating against you because of the color of your eyes, you know. And so by helping people reframe the experience of the opposite side of your bias, it helped people be more empathetic to, oh, okay, I get it, you know. And nothing does it helps people understand different perspectives than stories or the arts and, you know, or just, you know, exercises and things like that. So it's but it does take time. You just can't throw somebody into, we're going to play a game today, and you're all going to learn that your biases are all wrong, and this is the way to go. So, you know, but
to be honest, I think organizations have to be comfortable challenging the notion of who even needs to be in certain positions because, you know, I've used this adage, you know, for a long time, and that is, If I can't see it, then I can't be it. So if I come into an organization and I have, you know, I have aspirations to do whatever in the organization, and I don't see anybody that fits whatever socioeconomic demographic group that I'm in, then it is going to be hard for me to see that as a possibility for me. So I think, again, you know, you just have to be very you have to put a lot of effort. I'm encouraged that, you know, businesses have kind of taken this on because, you know, businesses have spent, you know, hundreds of years solving business problems. And this is a business problem. So, you know, what I think it takes more than anything else is focus and a commitment for the long run and understanding that this is a true business imperative. Because the folks that you're communicating who you are as a business to not only the folks that work inside that business, you're communicating to any and every customer that you encounter with that's the kind of company that I want to stand about. And people are making decisions about do I want to purchase from this organization and if I feel like that they are not accepting of all cultures. It's a business imperative.
Yeah. In fact, the woman that started Stitch Fix, which is she's the youngest CEO at the IPO public company. Even the vendors she buys things from, her suppliers, she wants to know how many diverse people they have on their board of directors. And she'll drop some of her suppliers if they don't meet certain standards because she's communicating to her company and she's communicating to the customers that this is important to her.
Exactly. It becomes a business objective.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's strategy. So on our, as we're wrapping up here, do you have any last words of wisdoms, you know, to help us get through at least the rest of the year with this crazy pandemic? Is there something that you want people to kind of use as a tool or a job aid or just a mind-helping aid to, you know, kind of get us through these next months, hopefully, with the vaccine on the way?
Well, I think, you know, more than anything else, I think it's one of those situations where we all need to get through this together, but to be active in being a part of doing it together and look for opportunities to connect with people differently than you have before. You know, don't be so focused on your daily task of getting things
mm-hmm.
done, and not take an opportunity during that day to connect. And if you're having a conversation with somebody and it runs a little longer than you would ordinarily, you know, try not to get frustrated by that, because that may be the only interaction that person has. And again, we all have to feel like we're in this together. We all have to feel like
yep.
we're connected as a society, because, you know, everybody's kind of facing the same kind of challenges.
Yeah.
Kind of challenges. And if, as an employer or as an individual, you're wondering, you know, am I going to be healthy? Is my family healthy? You may have lost loved ones. You know, all these things impact you. In addition to what's happening with my job, and I'm watching around the world as people are laid off, and what's going to happen with all, people are carrying all these pressures, and they need to talk it out, and they need to connect in. And
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
any one person can be the sounding board for all that, but collectively we can. So that's my biggest thing is, you know, when you have a chance to visit with somebody, particularly your employees, and I'm talking to you leaders, when you have a chance to connect with your employees, make who they are, what they are, and a priority, and try to help them unload some of the burdens that they're carrying with you. And hopefully your leaders are going to do the same thing with you, and collectively we can kind of help people kind of make this turn to kind of what hopefully soon will be the post-pandemic world, and then how
yeah.
we go forward.
Yeah, well, awesome. Well, that is a great way to help us all kind of get through this together. And I appreciate your time today, and I'm sure our listeners will thoroughly enjoy listening to the show. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy, and be safe and be well.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot.